Okay, so we're going to recite the Metta Sutta in English. It's much nicer in Pali.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest things that the wise would later approve, wishing in brightness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or tall, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart, one might cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. Is it to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fix views, the pure heart is one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
You want me to hold this the whole time, I guess. Huh? Is that right?
Sorry?
You want me to hold this the whole
time? If you can, is that all right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just couldn't remember it.
Yeah.
It wasn't just for Q&A, it's for... Okay. All right. About around 7:20, I don't want to spend a half hour just talking, but because I spend more time at the end. But we do get a half hour meditation, right?
Yeah,
so as long as you get that, that's the important part. That's what I say. When the last time I was here, I remember this really well because a gentleman who was sitting right over there said, "How do you let go?" He says, "How do you do it?" You know, he wasn't smiling when he said it. And I couldn't really, I gave him a rather lame answer because I mean, that takes a lot to say, and there's different ways. But I wanted to give an answer now because I just want to. And there's different kinds of letting go. The simplest kind is when you're, you know what mindfulness is, sati, present moment awareness. That's mainly what we practice. Okay, when you practice that correctly and you're open to whatever's coming and you let it come, then you're letting go. You accept, you're content. This is letting go. You may wish you were somewhere else or this or that, or your knee may hurt or one thing or another, but when you just open yourself up and you're mindful, as they say, or you practice present moment awareness, that's one way of letting go. That's the most obvious way. Then there's another way, which is on a kind of higher level, you might say. And that is, you reach letting go, profound letting go, by means of wisdom. So what we're doing when we meditate is we're going to gain eventually, after a long practice. Sometimes it's not so long. It depends on who you are and how you practice and what your karma is. But after practicing diligently, you with mindfulness, and you begin to see how you're affected and what's causing all these things to happen that are going through you, and you develop some sense of anatta, you know, non-self, that there isn't any self doing it, even a smidgen of that, and you see that over and over again. Pretty soon, you start to get an idea of what's going on, and you see what things are causing you suffering. You know, it's like a physicist in a laboratory doing experiments, and he does the same thing over and over, and he begins to see connections, and he makes laws, you know, or he principles, or he has theories anyway. And so we begin to see the things that are causing us suffering or causing other people suffering. And then once you really see it over and over and over again, then it's not a problem to let go. It's like a person who puts his hand in the fire. You don't have to really think about pulling it out, right? It just happens. Your body, some part of you just does it, you know, automatically. Once you realize what's causing you suffering all the time, you'll just do it. You know, you'll just pull it out. You won't have to think about how am I going to let go. The letting go is a natural thing that happens when you have wisdom. To gain wisdom, you have to practice diligently. Okay, so now I've answered Mr. What's-His-Name. So what we're practicing here is present moment awareness, and we're doing it with a meditation object. The meditation object, of course, is the breath, or maybe not, of course, maybe you're not. Maybe you've done other kinds of meditation. And we're going to watch the breath, a natural breath, not a yogic breath. We're not doing anything special with it. We're not holding it. We're not trying to extend it or make it fast or slow. We just have a natural breath, and whatever the body does or feels like doing, it may make it faster as we go along, or it may make it slower. It may make it longer or shorter. The pauses may change in length, and so on, right? So we're watching all these things happen to us. And we just watch the breath. That's our meditation object. Hopefully we can persist in that, but like everybody else, we'll start thinking about things. The mind is always active and always ready to sneak in there with thoughts about one thing or another. So you'll find yourself drifting off. Probably, like most people, we find ourselves drifting off into some thought or other, and then our mindfulness hopefully will catch us. That's what mindfulness does. Sati, the word means memory, and it also means knowing what you're trying to do, aside from mindfulness. Sati. And so we remember what our object is, and our object is to maintain our attention on the breath. That's our aim. That's our object. So mindfulness says, hey, you're off again. You're off the track. And so you bring your mindfulness back to just the breath. And I still like the simile, and I've seen this in Bhante Gunaratana's book. So if somebody says, well, you can't use that because it's not in the suttas, I think Bhante Gunaratana knows a little bit more about it. The simile of a weight trainer who wants to develop his muscles, he has to keep, you know, pumping iron, right? So we develop a kind of muscle, you might say, in our mindfulness of bringing ourselves back to the mindfulness of the meditation object, the breath, every time we drift off. You get it? You get what I mean, right? Am I being unclear? It's an exercise. That's why it's called practice. We have to practice it over and over again. And it's not easy when you start. kind of difficult, actually. And the breath may sound like the simplest way you could meditate, but it isn't. It isn't the simplest way. However, on the Noble Eightfold Path, sati is, I think, number 7, and I'd have to count them, but it would have to be 7. Sati, and that's the way it starts it's actually mindfulness of all the body and mind, each separate part, going through different sections. However, it always starts with the breath. That's the first start of sati and the Noble Eightfold Path on step 7. And you know, you don't practice them just 1, 2, 3, you know, you practice them all together. It's a unified kind of thing. It just happens to be 7. And mindfulness. Okay, does anybody have any questions about the breath and how to maintain awareness of the breath? Or I'll just keep rambling on here. Yes. Is that very loud?
Sorry, I've got a really weird question.
Oh, good. That's interesting.
Do you have the shapes a little bit?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I have a...
Is that like a...
I've had it for years. It's called a tremor. That's all the neurologists will say. It's a tremor. It's called primary tremor, as opposed to secondary to another disease. Is primary, it's just that. And they said, well, if it really gets bad, he says, if you have to sign a really big check, he said, have a shot of whiskey, or maybe two. That's what he said. He knew I was a monk.
I'm sorry to say that. I'm sorry to say that. I don't mean to.
Oh, yeah, that's all right. Because I want, you know, I don't want that to be in your mind when you're trying to meditate. Oh, no, people say, oh, you must have Parkinson's, but that's not true. If I had Parkinson's, I wouldn't be here. No, it's not a symptom of that.
And one other question.
Yes,
my daughter's
sir.
In Canada at the moment.
I'm sorry?
My daughter's in Canada at
yeah.
the moment.
Yes.
And she's taken up the practice as well.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Where?
In Whistler.
Whistler.
Yeah, Canada.
There's no resort. She's done there, like she's gone for a.
Okay.
She's working there. Yeah.
That's good.
And that's all right.
I'm not from Canada, but I respect it.
That's right.
I'm from the U.S., but I'm a citizen here too. I have dual. I just got it in January. About the breath, what I wanted to say was if you just take ordinary breaths and just watch them, as I was saying, it's just an ordinary breath. It goes in and it goes out, and you watch the different aspects of it, and you don't try to do anything to it. You step back, as you should with any aspect of your body mind. You step back and watch it without doing anything, and hopefully without verbal commenting. But that creeps in too, so don't worry about it. You just keep bringing your attention back to your breath over and over again. And that's basically it. That's the practice that we're doing. And I'll coach, because I think everybody wants that coaching, and I'll start out with more and then diminish it as we go along, and try to keep everybody on the track, and whatever inspires me in the moment to help. I encourage you to meditate on your own at home in silence. Set up a place, you know, and every day, or maybe more than once a day, practice for as long as you can, and then extend it. You know, keep going. That's how you. That kind of determination is how you will succeed. Okay. Anybody have questions? Because me, remember something I forgot to say, or let's see. This is the favorite meditation that the Buddha taught, and there's a whole sutta called Mindfulness of Breathing, and this is the one Ajahn Brahm prefers and teaches. And it can lead, another advantage of the breath meditation is that it can lead to deep stillness meditation. In other words, jhanas, if you're familiar with the term jhanas, it's a very, very, very deep meditation, a deep one-pointedness that can lead to insights. And the insights lead to wisdom. And then the wisdom eventually leads to awakening. All right, so that's the whole point of meditation. Okay, so I guess we can start. Let's see what time it is. Okay, everybody, become mindful of your breathing. I know you're already breathing, so I won't say that, but you can close your eyes and just relax. One thing I didn't mention was anything about relaxing the body. Sit up straight, keep your spine straight, keep your head balanced on your neck. It will reduce neck pain and lower back pain if you do. That's the way to sit. Even if you're sitting on a cushion on the floor, try to keep as straight up, upright as possible, and even have somebody look at you from the side and tell you if you're... And usually people lean forward, and they think they're sitting straight up, but they're not. So you can have somebody help you if you want to be precise about it. And it will help to keep straight up and down. And you can go through your body in the beginning and do a relaxation exercise, a short one, whatever one you're familiar with. For instance, you can imagine that there's a plane sitting on top of your head, a plane like a square, and it's going down through the top of your head and down, and it's pushing out all the tension in your head, and in your face, around your eyes, and around your mouth, and then your neck. Any tension that develops in your neck, that's a favorite place to develop a lot of tension. So you want to pay attention to that. Anytime you want to repeat this exercise briefly while you're meditating is fine. Whatever you need, you do. So it keeps going down through your through your shoulders and the upper part of the torso and down, and you just let all the tension go out through your fingers from that part of the body, and you keep going down through the stomach where people hold tension and so on in the stomach area. And you keep pushing that plane down through your legs and upper legs, the thighs, down through the knees and the lower legs, and then push all the tension out through the feet, the soles of the feet. And if you need to do it again, fine, anytime. And just feel the body, feel the whole body, feel your body pressing down in the seat, gravity, the weight of the body, and the weight of your hands in your lap, or wherever they may be, the weight, the pressing of the feet onto the cushion, all of these sensations. And now direct your attention to the breathing as the breathing goes in and out. You can notice the pace, if it's fast or slow or whatever you think it might be, or just watch it. Keep the present moment awareness on the breathing. Sometimes there are noises you hear from outside or inside the room, coughing or rustling or a car honking or something like that. Just, you can just be aware of it, note it in a sense, and just don't say anything about it. Just return your attention to your breathing. Okay, continue to stay focused on your breathing if you've drifted off. Feel the temperature of the air going in your nostrils and the air going out. One more thing to notice as you go, maybe that'll change later, maybe not. Notice, you can notice the ticking of the clock and just notice that once and then just return to the breathing. if you feel good, if you feel tingling, that's a wonderful feeling. Happiness. You can feel how good the breath feels going in and out, the fresh, fairly cool breath, bringing life-giving energy to you. This breath is your life, and we never pay attention to it. So here's an opportunity to pay attention to this force, this life-giving force that's in the breath, carried by the breath. We share the breath with all the living beings, even the ones in the water have to breathe oxygen in some way. We share that. In some way it binds us all together. All the creatures on the earth are together, having this support for life. Connection. But it's something we rarely look at, unless we're breathing really hard or can't get our breath or something, but ordinary breathing is almost unconscious. So take this opportunity to breathe consciously, aware of every breath going in and out, every breath, none escaping. So like the little shepherd boy herding the sheep and down the lane one at a time, and keeping them from straying. To the left they might stray into the fields and that would be the past, and then if they stray to the right, that's thinking about the future. And he may have a long stick and he kind of taps them to keep them back on the road. So if the past is bothering you, it's like a suitcase in one hand, the left hand, regrets or whatever, just let it go, drop it. And if you have hopes or desires or worries about the future, it's in the right hand, let that go. And be in the present. If you're drifting off at all, return to the breath. If you feel sleepy, you can rub your face without making noise. Or if you're really falling asleep, you can stand up and breathe. Meditate standing, that's one position. If you're thinking obsessively about something, make a note of that. What is that thing that is nagging at you? later. Maybe you can think about that more and deal with it after the meditation. But let go of it for now. Later you can think about all sorts of things. Make a deal with your mind. Mind, I'll let you think about anything later, but right now you have to just observe the breath and not talk. No more verbalizing. Evaluation for the breath. Evaluation for the energy that it brings. Aside from gases, oxygen, nitrogen, and carbon dioxide, it has some kind of energy. And again, you may feel that tingling through the body. So as you breathe, step back inside yourself, step back from what's going on, and observe without commenting. Whatever the breath is, just be content with it. That's what's happening in this present moment. Do you feel tension somewhere? Relax that part or go through the whole exercise again. Don't let tension build up around your eyes, your mouth, face. Keep your posture straight as you can in your seat. Don't let your head drop. It will pull you into drowsiness and sleep. If you're drifting off, bring your mind back to the breath. Bring your sati, your awareness in the present moment, back to the breathing. If you have pains, say in your knee, try to accept them and let it go. If it's an excruciating pain, then you'll have to change your posture or your position of your legs or something. Return to the breathing if you've slipped off the track. Now in the last couple of minutes, just if you wish, say to yourself in your mind what I say. May I be happy and peaceful. May all beings be well, happy, and peaceful. May I be happy and peaceful. May all beings be happy and peaceful. May I be happy. May all be happy. And you can continue to repeat that till we're done. May I be happy. May all be happy. Or just, may I be happy. You can sync the statement, may I be happy with your breathing. May I on the in-breath be happy on the out-breath. So it's almost time to end the session, and the lights will go on, so you can slowly open your eyes and get used to the light without shocking yourself. Lights can go on slowly. Takes them a while to get on, and you can let your thoughts settle in, if you have thoughts. Maybe you have something to say, or a question, or an observation, or a remark of some kind you might want to say. And to do that, we can pass the mic, because I won't be able to hear you probably. So if anybody has anything they want to say, raise your hand or something, or
you might need to use the mic, it's a little bit soft, sorry.
You want to use it?
No, I couldn't hear, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, that's the problem. If anybody has something to say, just raise your hand, and we'll pass the mic to you. Anything else? Any questions? Anybody have any questions about what we did, about the meditation we did, or about the process, or anything not clear? Can you go home and do this yourself? Are there any things that I may have left out? That no questions. Well, there aren't too many people, but oh, thank you.
It's more of a question for everyone else. When I'm with my breath, I can feel my back just cracking. I don't know if that is me actually relaxing, if I've got something wrong with my back, or if that's just me holding my tension and the breath and the breathing out is just relieving that tension. Does anyone else feel
at
that?
At the very beginning? Or
just hold throughout the whole thing.
Could feel your breath.
It just, as I breathe out, I can big breath in, and then as I breathe out, I can just feel little bits of my back. Just, I can hear the little cracking. Sorry,
well, it sounds like relaxation to me, but
it's not painful. But I wonder, I've become less stressed as I've been coming to the classes, so I'm wondering if I'm carrying less stress, and this is what gets me through my week. That I am letting go of more stress when I'm here.
Could be. I think it could be. It sounds like it. I don't know exactly, because I don't know what else it could be, except a little relaxation would be giving you a chiropractic treatment. Kind of. That's nice. Did you relax before the session started? Did you do that relaxation at all?
When we were sitting in the class.
Yeah. Well,
it happens to be a Tuesday night thing. I can just feel it relaxing.
Does this happen other times?
I'm oblivious to it other times. And I can just
no, I mean, other times when you have meditated,
yes.
Has it happened before?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, good. And it doesn't, you don't think it happens just when you're, say, sitting and maybe watching? I don't know if you watch television, but if you were.
It might do, but I was just wondering, like, I'm aware it would get rid of some stress and tension, but I don't know if that's because of the breathing. I don't know. I just thought I'd ask a question.
Well, I tell you, this is why we meditate, and I may, believe it or not, like I say, it's an experiment. The whole thing is experimental. It's like you're a scientist, and you're finding out things about your body-mind. So that's one thing that you can jot down that you learned. And so the scientist observes things, but he doesn't know exactly why, right? And so then he does experiments, and he develops a theory. And then he tests that theory with various, you know, in various ways, and he comes up with a better theory. So that's what we do. You want to find out ultimately what's causing suffering. I mean, I would say that's the ultimate goal. So you're looking at how your body-mind acts and what's going through the mind and the perceptions, the feelings, all the thoughts, all the will, all the desire to do things, the desire to think anyway, no matter what, doing, and then the consciousness itself. All those things are things you observe. You should observe. That's the practice. But the main practice is the breathing. You do it with breathing.
I've just noticed over the last few weeks, you know how you say, like, if you're trying to make your mind peaceful and you're trying to control it too much, then you can't do that and it doesn't happen. I'm finding now that with my back, that if I'm like, I imagine my back's going to relax it, then it won't. And then I let go, and then later on, like towards the end, I'm just letting go, and then...
Yeah, that's right, letting go. So you learn something about letting go and and the will, and how the will interferes with the whole idea of letting go, because it's still, you've still got that master, that imaginary bus driver is sort of trying to command the rest of the passengers when he doesn't really exist. But we have will, but what's causing the will is like derived from karma and our upbringing and so on. Anyway, I don't want to get into anatta because it's too complicated. It would take too much time to talk about. Yes?
Maybe just change posture a little bit.
Yes, you could try that.
Oh, it's good cracking. I like it. It's not that I'm not upset with it. I'm just wondering if I'm just paying more attention to it because I am quiet, because I'm not quiet very often. if you ever think that. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good thing.
Anyone else?
You said that the
do you want to hear
no,
me?
I've got a big voice.
Well, okay, so everybody can hear
yes.
you. That's what
I've
my
got Jesus voice. It's
oh, okay. Well, I have poor hearing, so I may not hear you.
You said that the breathing was quite difficult to do meditation. Could be a difficult meditation.
Yes.
What meditation you like doing? Or what one would you think would be perhaps not as difficult as the breathing one?
Well, there's tons of different kinds of meditation. Metta is probably easier in we did a little metta meditation at that's loving kindness meditation at the very end.
Yes, I know that.
So you have something you can usually say, at least that's the way I learned it from Bhante Gunaratana. There are various things that you can say, and you can look in his book for the formulas, but I like to just stick with may I be happy. And you have to start, by the way, with yourself. You have to. That's the way you do metta. You start with yourself, and then you expand it to others in different ways. But I don't want to get into teaching metta right now. That would be a whole separate class. But it's easier, and it makes people feel very happy, and that's another kind of meditation you can do, and you can do it in conjunction with breathing. Okay.
Yes, I have been coming to meditation over the years for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and I have experienced the different ways of doing it. I was just interested to hear what you would consider as one that, you know, was easier than the breath, because the breath is the one that Ajahn Brahm seems to like to do
yeah.
all the time. Yeah.
Right. well... Mm. I would stick with the breathing myself because it takes you farther.
All right, okay.
Or further.
Further.
You're the teacher. Okay. further in your progress, ultimately. But if you've had a rough day, and everybody has rough days, there's nothing better probably than sitting down and doing metta. Do it for yourself. And if you had trouble with others, then do it for them too,
mm.
or one other person, that sort of thing. I mean, it's great to do metta. It's a great, great meditation. The other ones, I don't know. I have to think about what to recommend. I don't want to recommend anything besides breathing and metta.
I mean, a lot of the monks that come here have their different ways of doing meditation, and
mm-hmm.
one was to look at your problems and try and solve them while you're... I find that one very difficult, and
I don't meditate that way. I don't know what to say. I wouldn't... Personally, I wouldn't recommend doing something like that, especially for somebody beginning.
Mm.
That is not the way that I learn meditation, and I don't know what to say. I don't want to criticize somebody else's teaching. It's just not something I can comment on very well. It's up to you to. That's part of the experimenting thing, you know. You just have to try it and see. If it works wonders for you and you get in jhana, then by all means persist, you know. It just depends on your reaction. That's what you want to find out. That's why we do it. We don't know. And I can't tell you about yourself. You can only talk about your problems yourself, unless you have a teacher who can read minds, and there are some. Then the only person who can find out what's going on with you is you yourself. So the meditation is truly experimentation and discovery of what makes you tick, you know? Of the maybe you've heard about the aggregates and the different things. I mean, I mentioned them before. You know, your body, your perception, your feelings, and then the will. What's taking place in your thoughts and the drive to do things, and then consciousness. Those are all things that that you will notice things about. But you can leave that and return to the breath. are different ways of doing it. Anybody else? If not, I better start on my talk, unless somebody wants to ask me something that will help them meditate. Okay, then I'll start on my talk. But if you have questions while I'm talking, then by all means. Okay, so I'll start with this rather dramatic story that has to do with the theme. And the theme of the story of this has to do with the connection of virtue, or what we call morality virtue, which was one third of the Noble Eightfold Path that goes Sila, Samadhi, Panya, which means morality or virtue, and then Samadhi means meditation. I'm just making it simple. And then Panya means wisdom. So those are the three parts of the Noble Eightfold Path that have to work together. So what I want to just talk about a little bit is virtue and its effect on Samadhi. Because what I say is that there probably isn't any better way to improve your meditation than to work on your morality virtue. So there's this story that I was told, and it's a true story, I'm sure. Had a friend who was an older man than me. Anyway, he passed on, and he was, when I knew him, he was probably my age now, or maybe older, I don't know. But he was he had been an engineer, and he was retired. And he was very active, a very smart man. This is when I was in West Virginia at Bhavana Society, back in the from 03 to 09. And he had a class that he had started in a prison. He had developed it, and knowing him, he probably had a whole sheaf of papers to submit to the government to let him do this class and so on. So he came to me one day ecstatic, and he had this report. This was a great success story for him, and especially for the person. You'll see why, because now this must have been a very high security prison, because the prisoners had a rule there, and this is among the prisoners, had nothing to do with the warden or the guard, that if you discovered that somebody had stolen from you, you had to kill them. And the prisoners by and large accepted that rule, which probably kept the stealing down somewhat. But this prisoner who had been going to this meditation class for some time reported that he had discovered that a friend of his, a pal, pretty good friend anyway, a little more than an acquaintance, had to be the person who stole something. He didn't say what it was. I don't know what it was. It could have been just a pack of cigarettes, for that matter. But he had definitely decided that guy had stolen something from him, and that he decided that he had to kill him. That was the code in the prison. So one day he had an opportunity, and he had a pipe. He got a pipe somewhere, a big, heavy pipe, metal pipe. And he was going to, the guy who had his back to him, and he was going to kill him. And then I would say, you know, that because of his meditation and practice of mindfulness, he was able to step back and see what was going on in himself, and see what so-called he was about to do, and the results. And he could see what the results would be. And there was a moment there that was, could have gone either way, but he let it go. So then later, the next class they had, he reported it. And I would say that's a success story. And it certainly has something to do with virtue. And now its effect on meditation is not exactly clear, but there is another thing I want to mention right here, which is has to do with virtue, which is what the Buddha called kiri-otapa. And that is moral shame and moral dread. Kiri-otapa, it's two different things. Moral shame and moral dread, and the Buddha said that the two lucid things that protect the world. If we didn't have them, we wouldn't have respect for anyone, even our mothers. And moral shame is when you feel that others could see what you're doing, and you yourself can see what you're doing, and you feel that shame. You feel that that's wrong, that you wouldn't want anyone else to know what you were doing, right? That's a kind of the shame. The other, moral dread, means that you dread the consequences. The karmic, and Buddhism would say the karmic consequences. In other words, we would dread, and like this prisoner in this case, would dread the karmic results of killing someone. Because that would be wrapped up in your karma for the next life, or this life. It could come into fruition immediately, almost. That kind of thing builds up. So I wanted to mention this is one part of virtue and morality right from the start. Now, how do I connect that with meditation? How are we doing? Okay. All right, I have a verse I'll recite. Actually, it's two at the beginning of the Dhammapada. So it's the very first two verses. So I've always thought that they're probably very important. All actions are led by the mind. Mind is their master, mind is their maker. Act or speak with a defiled state of mind, and suffering will follow, as the cart wheel follows the foot of the ox. Next verse is, all actions are led by the mind. Mind is their master, mind is their maker. Act or speak with a pure state of mind, and happiness will follow you as your shadow follows without departing. So you can see the two images, the two similes there, of a cartwheel. And you can imagine 2,500 years ago a cart having huge, heavy wooden wheels with wooden axles, and you can imagine it being pulled by a big, heavy ox, and the cartwheel is following maybe in the ruts that were there in the mud, and it's clonking along, and whoever's in the cart is bouncing along, and it's a pretty rough ride. If your mind is filled with defilements, you have a pretty rough ride. And you know that circular movement of the wheel is like the wheels of life and death, rebirth, life and death, rebirth, samsara, they call it, going on and on through the same ruts, the same mistakes, and being reborn and falling the foot of this big heavy beast as it plods along. Now you contrast that with the simile in the second verse, which is your shadow follows you. This happiness will follow you as your shadow follows you without departing. And you can imagine a shadow as you're walking along, no matter what the ground is or what the obstacles are, the shadow just flows along. Just flows along as if it were a liquid or something like that, and nothing stops it, nothing impedes it. It's always there. As long as the sunshine is out, right? As long as you have purity in your mind, that's the sun, and you'll have this shadow of happiness that's going to follow you along wherever you go without departing. Okay, so here we have an example of virtue, and in particular in the second verse, you can imagine in In your meditation, if you have a pure mind, you'll have a happy mind. You'll be happy. This is extremely important if you want to get into deep states, because there are different steps into going into deep meditation. And you have to go, you start out with sati, just as we have. And one of the steps you get to is happiness, piti. Piti is sometimes described as tingling, although it's supposed to be a mental factor, it still has some physical aspects. So, not to get too technical, but happiness is an important factor in meditation and for the, of course, the rest of your existence. You want to be happy and you want to be free from suffering. Free from suffering, being free from suffering depends on virtue. They're connected. If you want to be free from virtue, focus on what's virtue and morality. Morality is the things that we're not supposed to do, and the other side of the coin is virtue is the things we should do that we want to cultivate. Right. So, okay, right up at the beginning of the, not at the very beginning of the Noble Eightfold Path, we have right thought. And so the three right thoughts, this is part of virtue, part of morality. Renunciation, and that means laying down sensual desire, basically. That's mainly what it means. Renunciation, loving kindness, which is metta, loving kindness, and compassion, karuna. Those three are the right thoughts that should be in our mind to replace their opposites, which I won't have to say, just their opposites. That's right thought. Okay, and we all are probably, maybe not, familiar with the five precepts that lay people take. You know, Buddhist lay people especially like to come to the monastery or the temple wherever they live in whatever country, and they're administered the five precepts by the monks who are there. But basically, not killing, not stealing, no adultery, and it can be interpreted as sensual overindulgence in the senses, and then not lying, and not drinking or taking drugs. Those five, if you can follow those five, you're on the right path right here. Those five will save you from a lot of suffering, from a lot of rides on the cart, from the ox cart, right? That's all in keeping a pure mind so that you have happiness without suffering. What else? Virtuous conduct. And then Bhante G listed virtuous conduct. He's got seven. Friendliness, well, that's really metta. He means metta by that, or loving kindness. He calls it friendliness. Compassion, generosity, truthfulness, sympathetic joy, which means that you take in the joy of anybody you know, even somebody you don't know, who's had a really wonderful experience. And they're experiencing joy. It's not something you say to them. They don't even know you feel this, but you feel their joy in you. Say your friend had a baby and she's really happy, and you just feel, you take that in, and you can always keep yourself happy because something good is happening to somebody somewhere. And if you take that into yourself, that's mudita. That's the third highest of the Brahma Viharas, of the higher mental states. That's going up, not the third highest, but the third one up. And I didn't finish. After that is a sober state of mind, and equanimity is the last, which is the highest of the Brahma Viharas. They're called the dwellings of the gods. These are mental states that are people that meditate on. Like, you can do metta, you can do karuna, which is compassion, which is wishing that other people not come to harm, basically. That's compassion. And then you can do mudita, which I mentioned, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, which is the highest, which is a kind of balance and not being put out of balance. These I would include under virtue. You can develop these virtues. You can practice them. And the way that we get to meditation, the four right efforts. Okay, after we have this, the third that is sila, which is virtue or morality. Then you have the third, which is samadhi, which includes meditation. But the very first step is the four right efforts. Now it's interesting that they follow right after sila, or morality or virtue. Okay, so in the four right efforts, what you do is, first of all, I didn't write them down, so I've got to wing it. The first right effort is that you repel any defilements that may come into your mind, or any even sense desires, anything that will impede your way in meditation. You keep them away. You repel them. All right. That's the first right effort, is to repel any defilement that may come into your mind. You repel it. You don't let it stay. The second right effort is any defilements that are habits, actually unvirtuous habits, that you have in your mind, you do your utmost to get rid of, to remove. And one way is through meditation, of course. And then the third right effort is that you, whatever virtuous qualities that you do not already have, you work to cultivate and bring into yourself. You work on these virtues. So I was naming all these various virtues, and these are things to work on. And the paramis too, the 10 paramis, which are like the 7 that I mentioned, but there's a couple, 3 more. You can always look them up. The paramis are mentioned often. And then the last, I haven't said. The last one is that any virtuous or moral habits that you have states of mind that you have, you want to perpetuate those and increase those and cultivate those and keep them in you and not let them slide away. Don't forget them. They're important. Your happiness depends on those. And meditation is sort of connected in there with those. Actually, in both ways. That's what we're doing in meditation. Defilements are going to come into your mind, and you need the expertise to know what to do to get rid of them. And what we find in the suttas, the Buddha's teachings, are how to do different things. Like how to correct our thoughts, when different ways to correct our thoughts, and this and that, so on. So then we get into samadhi, and as I was saying, that's what meditation is about. And if we have good states, we become aware of them. We can focus. We can switch our focus from the breath to something else. And if it's a really good state, then we can focus on that good state, or the happiness. If we feel happiness, we can switch our meditation object to that happiness, and that will lead us farther on. That's a more advanced kind of way of meditating. Right now, we're at the beginning. Some of you may be farther along, but you can do that. That's okay. If there's something very beautiful, like a beautiful light that comes into your mind, you can switch your meditation object to that light. Those lights, you may just see kind of amorphous lights and this and that. If you don't have to pay too much attention to them, unless they become very steady, very brilliant, like a moon, full moon on a black night,
that kind of thing. That's the archetypal one, the typical one, but people see different things. They're what Ajahn Chah called strange and beautiful creatures in the that come to the pond to drink. Strange and beautiful creatures are actually called nimitta, and they're just these mental objects. And once you have those, meditate, focus on them. Don't let them go, but if you grasp at them, they'll disappear. That's what Ajahn Chah says, and from experience you'll see. Because the natural thing is, oh my God, that's beautiful. And just like a deer, it will run off. Or a kangaroo, I guess, here. It wouldn't be a deer. Anyway, I think I will conclude, because we've come to the end, and that's pretty much all I had to say anyway. Unless there's a question. If somebody has a good question, I'm sure Doug will allow it. No, he's not going to allow it.
Thank you very much. I'm going to talk tonight. Very interesting. On behalf of the group, thank you very much.
Thank
and
you.
Hope to see you again.
Okay.
Thank you.